Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World Show. And the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. I believe that the Second Amendment makes all of the other amendments possible. And this podcast is not too political, and it's not too radical, and not too technical. Because I am not a gunsmith, I'm not ex-law enforcement, I'm not ex-military, and I'm not a firearms trainer. I'm just a private citizen, and I believe strongly in my Second Amendment rights. So I'm going to keep it real and talk about guns. So let's get started with the show.
This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com, podcasting freedom.
Okay, thanks for listening to episode 75. I gotta say, I'm enjoying a treat today. My treat is that I'm not out on the road traveling. A lot of times I'm doing this podcast while I'm traveling down the freeway, taking advantage of some windshield time. Not today. Today I'm enjoying the comfort, the great air conditioning here of my home office, and I gotta tell you, it's good to be able to be standing and sitting in one position for a while. I am gonna share an email here in the first part of this podcast with a listener from Finland. I do have some international listeners, and it's really great. I got to tell you, people that listen to me from other countries that are not quite so gun-friendly. Finland used to be gun-friendly, but not quite so much anymore, and I'll get to that as I get a little bit more into this show. I applaud you. Thanks for tuning in. You're tuning in to a guy that just talks about guns all the time, and you're from countries that where you can't go and you can't take an 8-hour course and make an application and pass a background check and get your concealed carry license as easily as we can here. Folks, you need to feel fortunate about living in the USA, at least if you live in a gun-friendly state, at least if you live in a shall-issue state. Think how very fortunate you are that the Second Amendment of the Constitution protects your God-given right that you have anyway to protect yourself with a gun. So having said that, I would like to go ahead and dive right into this email, and then I got some announcements. We'll take a break, and then I'll get to another topic. But I want to talk about military surplus guns once again. Apparently, that was a popular episode. I got a lot of compliments on that episode when I talked about military surplus guns. Well, a listener from Finland has some pretty good information to share about the Mosin Nagants. Now, I like to say Mosin Nagant. I think the actual pronunciation is Mosin Nagant. Something like that, pretty close. But it's easier for me, and I've been calling them Mosin Nagants for so many years. Bear with me when I use that pronunciation. But this comes from Miko in Finland. He says, Bob, greetings from Finland. Let me email you a couple notes about our Mosin Nagants. He said, first of all, we use our own chambering. It's the 7.62 by 53R. Most of the other Nagants are 7.62 by 54. By the way, I'm going to paraphrase his email as much as I can. It's obvious that Miko's English is not as good as yours and mine, but that's okay, because I pretty much get the gist here of what he's trying to say. He said, to make a long story short, our chamber is tighter. In most cases, it's possible to shoot regular ammunition, but it can raise the pressures a little too high. He said, the second thing he wanted to tell me is that we here in Finland use very high-quality ammo, usually match-grade, typically manufactured by Lapua and some by Seiko. He says, strangely, we shoot the same ammo in our machine guns, too. Now we use Russian-made machine guns, so we have to use the lower power cartridge for it, which I thought is interesting. He said part of the troops used the Russian Dragunov, and he said some of their rifles are still on conscript training, and they've started an adaptation of the 338 Lapua chambered Seiko TRG-42. He says our stuff is not very fancy like your military forces in the United States, but people have to remember that we are the last country besides Switzerland which has a conscript reservist defense force. Basically, he said, around 80 to 85% of the males perform military service. The rest are either unfit to go into military or they go into civil service, and that's also possible during the peacetime. He says, if you're not crazy about the idea of going to war and blowing people up. He goes on to say, I cannot stress strongly enough about the quality of ammo. It's what makes the rifle. Well, let me stop for a minute. I'm so glad he made that point, because it's what's that makes any gun, folks. The quality of the ammo makes any gun. Rifle, pistol, shotgun. Use good ammo. Okay, Miko continues with his email. He said, nowadays we have assault rifles as personal weapons. He said the Mosin Nagant was officially retired about 15 years ago. He said the Finnish assault rifle is AK-47 based, but its tolerances are a lot tighter. And he says, unfortunately, we have to still use iron sights. He said the name of the gun is the RK-62 and the newer model is the RK-95. He said the mechanical accuracy of these with the Lapua ammo can be just about sub-minute of angle. Of course, depending on the condition and the wear and tear of the rifle. And of course, he says if you really need to get maximum reliability, you definitely have to have good magazines, as usual, right? He said, but the chambers are very tight on them. He says it is possible to use typical 7.62 by 39 ammo, but use them with caution. He said using the Lapua ammo on the standard AK-47 can easily cut in half the size of your grouping. He said that, and he's talking about Finland here. Our military uses Berdan primers, and the civilian cartridges are just drilled boxer cases. He said the Lapua 7.62 by 39 factory ammo costs you an arm and a leg, but he says it's well worth it. Now, back to Mosin Nagants. Miko continues to write. He said there is quite reasonable factory ammo, which is 7.62 by 53 are Lapua Trainer or Seiko Range ammo. He said both of them are real mild loads with about 123 grain full metal jacket bullets. Now, he says, I cannot guarantee it, but most likely a Russian rifle or some other type of rifle like the Mosin Nagant will shoot better with that Lapua ammo. Also, he said the Finnish Mosin Nagants are 311 diameter, not 308 or 309. Some of them are even 310. And he said the smaller diameter bullets will work, but the rifling of the barrel on the Finnish Nagants are designed to work with the 311 diameter bullets. Now, he said, talking again about the Nagants, the Finnish Nagants. Many of the guns were manufactured before 1939. Some of those guns were not government-issue weapons, but people bought them with their own hard-earned money. That's interesting. And a little history here. He gives us a little history lesson. He said, he's talking about Finland again. We had a bloody civil war in 1917, so the government was not spending much money on defense because they were trying to maintain a stable society. So, reservists bought these rifles with their own cash and trained with either their own ammunition or sometimes government-issued ammo and sometimes just whatever that they could reload. He said if you were a poor peasant, you didn't want to spend your money on a rubbish gun. And when the Soviets started the invasion in 1939 in an event that the Finnish called the Winter War, we were lucky that people had so many rifles of their own. Whoa, that bears repeating here. When the Soviets started the invasion in 1939 in an event that we called the Winter War, we were lucky that people had so many rifles of their own. Cool, huh? Okay, can you say a militia of the people? What a concept. Men would grab their gun, their knife, their ammo, and their warm clothes, and we only had gas masks and the official insignias, and people went out there to fight. He says, anyway, during the 105 days of the Winter War, our own world record sniper, Simo Haya, and again, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that last name correctly. Anyway, he's the Finnish sniper with the most confirmed kills. He used his own personal Mosin Nagant with iron sights only. He thought that the optics would raise his profile too much and the glare of the optics would make him detected by the enemy. He achieved his world record in about 98 days. Then he was seriously wounded by a Russian explosive bullet to the head and lost around half of his jaw. Interesting, huh? Sniper, world record, most confirmed kills. At least I think it's probably a Finnish. I'm not sure about that world record. But anyway, using his own personal Mosin Nagant with iron sights. It's the Indian, not the arrow. Miko goes on to write, this gets better here as it goes along. He says, we rebuilt literally tons of Russian rifles that we captured during the war and during the Civil War. Actually, most of our rifles have Russian receivers, and most of the bolt is Russian. Our magic is on the barrel, the chamber, the trigger mechanisms, the stock, and the fit and finish of the rifle, and, of course, the ammo. He said, I'd also like to recommend to your listeners Swedish Mausers that are 6.5 by 55 millimeter. And yeah, you know what? I forgot to mention Swedish Mausers. So, Miko, thanks for bringing that up. He said, they're very nice, soft-shooting rifles, and you can use ballistically excellent 6.5 millimeter bullets. He said the 7.62 by 53R is about as smooth as a subway train. Yes. You know, they recoil, folks. They will pop your shoulder. Make sure you have the number of a good chiropractor when you're done shooting that rifle. Okay, and one more quick thing. When he finishes up his email to me, he says, Bob, thanks for the great podcast. It seems that the pinheads are actually a universal phenomenon. Now, he says pinheads, and he says, Bob, I hope I'm using that term correctly. He says, because I'm far from a native English speaker as I could be. I know what he's talking about. You know, I borrow the term pinheads from Bill O'Reilly. And yeah, Miko, that's what we call some of our naive, stupid, ignorant politicians. We call them pinheads because they're uninformed and they don't know what they're doing. He said, here in Finland, we used to have very liberal gun laws and especially politics. Since the 1920s, we've been required to get a permit and registration on a shall-issue manner. And he said, but it was quite easy to get a permit if you had a justified reason, quote, justified reason, such as a shooting hobby or a criminal. He says, now, unfortunately, after two very unfortunate school shootings during the last couple years, there have been strong anti-gun lobbying, and they've been successful. He says, it's interesting to note that these pinheads have a universal agenda, that the solution to the violence problem is disarming lawful citizens. It's worked quite well in the UK, hasn't it? Where more criminals have more weapons than the police. Our civilians are the third most armed per capita in the world. And he says, if we fall to the level of the UK, Bob, I hope that the United States stays a safe haven where we can all apply for refugee status. And that's his email. Miko, I assure you, I'm doing my best, and many of the other podcasters on the GRRN and the NRA and the Second Amendment Foundation and many other organizations here in the United States, we are working as hard as we can to make sure that the United States stays that safe haven. So yeah, if you want to apply for refugee status, come on over. Well, come here legally, though. Come here legally. But yeah, we'll welcome you if you come here and come here legally and enjoy our gun-free laws that we have so far. And so that, my friends, is a little info on the Finnish Mosin Nagants from Miko in Finland. Thanks very much. I appreciate you doing that. I love emails like this. And I guess that's kind of a continuation, again, of the military surplus guns. You know, I'll say it again, some of those military surplus guns, especially the old military rifles, some of them are some excellent buys out there, folks. So if you got some more information you'd like to share, please send them to me. I'm in the process of setting up a voicemail account where you guys can call your feedback in and speak on the voicemail if you want and ask me questions. But for now, send them to me on email or put them on the Gun Rights Radio Network forum. So before I take a break here and go to the next segment, let me make a couple of announcements real quick. The first announcement I want to cover is, don't forget about the Freedom Raffle. It's going great. I'm really excited about it after a couple of weeks. As a matter of fact, it's going so well. If it continues to be this successful, I'm going to get a fifth or a sixth prize in here and make a greater opportunity for you guys to win stuff. So don't hesitate. Figure out a way where you don't waste $10 this week and send it to me. Buy a raffle ticket. You can win an excellent engraved Ruger LCP. I'm giving away two gift certificates for $100 at CompTac Holsters, and I'm giving away a $100 gift certificate for knivesandgear.com. If you need a new knife or hiking and backpacking supplies and stuff, he's got it over there at Knives and Gear. handgunworld.com. And don't forget about my website, handgunworld.com. By the way, my YouTube channel, I put a couple of YouTube videos up there. Did one on gun safety for you new shooters. Check out my video on gun safety. And I'm going to have to redo my review on my car P380. Somehow by accident, I erased or deleted all my YouTube videos. I'm not quite sure how I did that, but anyway, there's some things I didn't cover in the first YouTube video about my car P380, so I will include that and do a new video here in about the next few days. But check out my YouTube channel. And last but not least, if you're not a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network Forum, go to gunrightsradio.com. They are going to be the benefactors of one-third of the money from the Freedom Raffle, but for now, get your free account over there, and you can interact with me and interact with all the other podcasters on the Gun Rights Radio Network. So that is it. That's the conclusion of segment number one. Let's take a quick 15 to 20-second break here, and I'll be right back. Okay, for this next segment, guess what? My treat is over. Even though that was a short break for you, that was kind of a long break for me because I got a business phone call and I have to go out and see a customer. So I guess what? I'm back in the vehicle, but that's not going to stop me from doing the rest of this show. So I want to, first of all, answer one more email I forgot to do in segment number one. Somebody emailed me about my Freedom Raffle, and he wanted to know if he needed to have a GunPal account to be able to buy a ticket. The answer is no, you don't need a GunPal account. Just click the donate button at handgunworld.com, and GunPal is going to process the payment, but you can just use a regular, ordinary credit card or debit card and buy your tickets that way. Try to use debit, folks. Don't go into debt. I'm a big believer in living debt-free. So hopefully that answers your question, sir. No, you don't need a GunPal account. Just click the donate button. So now that I got that out of the way, a couple of weeks ago, a listener asked me what did I think about my G34, my Glock 34. So I want to spend this segment talking about it. I haven't done a gun review in a while. Here's what I think of my Glock 34. You know, you heard me say a couple podcasts ago that I'm going to retire it for about 3 or 4 months because I really want to work on my G19. Actually, I'm going to work on my Glock 19, on shooting that and perfecting that for an entire year. But every once in a while, I'll probably yank that G34 out just because it's such a fantastic, cool gun. For those of you that might be just getting into competition shooting, let me share this with you. The Glock 34 and the Smith & Wesson M&P Pro, both of those guns pretty much rule the IDPA stock service pistol category. So again, if you want to become a serious gamer, then yes, the Glock 34 is an excellent pistol for that, and I'll tell you why. If you want to just have a concealed carry gun, then I would say it's probably may not be the best choice just because it is so big. And there's a couple of other things about it that I don't care for regarding concealed carry that I'll tell you about. So let me tell you about the advantages first. The Glock 34, when you buy it, it has the 3.5-pound connector in it already. The trigger bar connector is what I'm talking about. Now, Glock lately has been calling it a 4.5-pound connector. I don't know why. It probably has something to do with liability. But it comes standard with the 3.5-pound. What does that mean? People say, hey, that's great. That means it's a lighter trigger. Well, not really. Not really. It's not really a lighter trigger. In other words, it doesn't really take less pressure to press the trigger. What it does mean is that the trigger travels in a little bit of a different way and it feels lighter. Now, if you pull out one of those trigger pull measuring instruments and you pull the trigger on the G34 and you measure that, measure how much force it takes to press the trigger, then do the same thing on a regular Glock, it's probably going to measure a little bit lighter. The connector, and again, folks, I'm not a gunsmith. You've heard me say it many times, so bear with me here. But the trigger bar connector is a different shape, which basically means that it makes the trigger travel a little differently and gives it the feel of a lighter trigger. Is it more accurate? That's kind of a subjective question. Here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say, sure, the gun is more accurate, but not completely because of the trigger. There's a lot of reasons why I can be more accurate with my Glock 34, although I haven't noticed much of a difference. So for those of you who are wondering, should I get a large gun or should I get a small gun? You know, like the emailer that sent me a message wanting to know if he should compete with his Glock 36. And you heard my answer. Yes, go compete with your Glock 36. If it's what you carry, go compete with it. Get good with it. Why wouldn't you want to get good with your carry gun? But I'm generally more accurate with my Glock 34 because of the very long sight radius. I think it's like over 8-inch sight radius. You know, a lot of people look at the Glock 34 and they say, gee, that barrel's ported, isn't it? No, it's not ported. There's a cut in the top of the slide. The reason Glock does that, the reason they cut a hole in the top of the slide, it all has to do with slide weight. Glocks operate basically on... I mean, they've engineered these things down to operate on a combination of the ammo recoil, the slide weight, the spring tension. It all kind of works together. And they needed to give shooters the ability to have a long sight radius for competition, but maintain the reliability and the functionality of a Glock. So what they did is they lightened the slide. The slide on that Glock 34 is not too much heavier than the slide on the Glock 17. And the reason being is because of that cutout. So it's not a ported barrel. It looks that way. There are aftermarket ported barrels, I've heard, that are sold, but I think those are kind of silly. I wouldn't get one of those. So the longer sight radius... The trigger press, for competition, I would have to say yes. I definitely prefer that 3.5-pound trigger connector for competition. I won't carry it that way, but for going out and gun gaming it, yeah, that's better. As a matter of fact, what I did is I changed out the trigger return spring, and I put an overpowered Wolf trigger return spring on there, an overpowered spring. The way a Glock works, if you were to find a Glock armor and have the Glock armor show you his sample pistol, he's got one of these Glock pistols with all the cutouts, with everything cut out so you can see how all the trigger mechanism is working and everything. And if you were to look inside that gun, you'll notice the way a Glock works is that if you look at the spring that makes the trigger reset, if that is an overpowered spring, it also helps with trigger pull. And I think, to me, it feels like it also shortens that reset just a little bit. Now, Glocks have a pretty short reset anyway, but changing out that spring to an overpowered Wolf trigger return spring seems to me to at least shorten the reset, still keep the nice crisp break, and it lightens it up just a bit, and mine breaks at, like, right around 3 pounds, 2 ounces, which is right about pretty much where I like it for competition. So that's one reason why I shoot the Glock 34 a little more accurately. And Smith & Wesson M&Ps, you know, those have a big following in the competition sports, shooting sports. Well, the M&Ps, you can send an M&P back to Smith & Wesson for what they call their performance center trigger job. And they actually change out the sear and change out a few other parts. If you own a Smith & Wesson M&P, I'd strongly suggest that you do that. I've had a chance to shoot an M&P Pro, and it feels great. I mean, I'm really impressed with that. I really am. I like that trigger as much as I like the Glock trigger. I'd have to get a little bit used to the reset. I still think the reset's a bit longer on the M&P Pro, even with the Performance Center trigger job, but it's sweet. I mean, and that's very much like a 1911 feeling pistol. So you might want to think about getting that done. By the way, if you send it back to Smith & Wesson and they do the work, then it falls under their warranty. So if anything goes wrong, they're fixing it. And also from a liability standpoint, if you use your Smith & Wesson and it's been modified, you know, there's some people out there that come from the argument that if you modify a gun, you use it for self-defense, that's something that lawyers can use against you. You know, that's pretty debatable. And again, I'm not an attorney, and I'm not going to profess to be an attorney. There are all kinds of great classes out there that talk about the aftermath of a shooting. Take them as much as you can and learn from the experts in that. So it's a big argument. It's you know, you can start a bar fight with that argument as to whether you're going to be, you know, in trouble using a modified gun or not. My belief is don't mess with it. Leave it alone. Keep it as reliable as you can. Well, if you send your M&P back to Smith & Wesson and they do the work, it's probably going to be good work. And if it's not, then they're standing behind it and you've got somebody to send it back to. And then you can say, if you ever have to use your gun, I hope that day never comes, as I always say, but if you have to use it, then you can say, look, you know what? The factory did the modifications to the gun. I didn't change it. I didn't have anybody else change it. So, I got a little off track there, sorry, but the Glock 34, getting back to these competition guns, these long slide guns, so to speak. Another reason I love the Glock 34 is the extended mag release button. For competition, that's important. It shortens the time of my reloads considerably. Now, I just use the Glock mag release button, extended mag release button. I've messed around with some others. I've had three or four different types on there. Really didn't care for them. The way my hand fits on a Glock, my thumb is a long thumb. The Glock extended magazine release button is just fine for me. It's legal for IDPA, no problems. Legal for USPSA, so I just leave it. The one thing I don't use is I don't use the extended slide release lever. Now, for some people, they think that's a lot faster. For some people who reload that way and they use the slide release lever to chamber a new round, I don't, as you heard, I don't recommend that for self-defense. But some people do that in competition. I like to practice the overhand tug method. Matter of fact, when James and I were shooting last Thursday night, he noticed that. And I even had one person tell me that I was slower doing it that way. And yeah, I agree with him. I know that I am slower doing it that way, but I'm out there trying to practice like I carry. I don't use that extended slide release because my thumb tends to hit it during recoil. As much as I try, I've tried everything. Tried everything to make sure that my thumb does not hit that extended slide release lever during recoil, but it does. And so all of a sudden, the slide rams forward when I don't want it to. So I took that off and I went back to the regular Glock slide release. The barrel on the G34 is something like 5 1/4 inches, so you get good velocity. When I used factory Winchester white box ammo at the Texas State IDPA Championship. Now, I know people say, hey, Bob, you know, guess what? Use softer ammo and you can shoot faster. Yeah, I know. I know I could use softer ammo. I could buy it or learn to reload it and I could shoot faster. But again, why am I at IDPA? I'm at IDPA to get good with what I carry. So I shot some factory ammo. I carry factory ammo. And in fact, I was using some Winchester white box and some Blazer because they're hot. They're hot rounds and I want to simulate as much as I can my carry gun. But the longer barrel gives you good velocity. So if you are reloading, it makes it a lot easier to meet the power factor. At IDPA, you have to have a power factor of 125 in the stock service pistol division. And for you newbies out there that are relatively new, what that means is when they say a power factor of 125, what they do is they take the weight of your bullet and they multiply the weight of your bullet by the speed at which it travels. So, for example, if you have 115 grain, 9mm, and it's traveling at 1,000 feet per second, 115 times 1,000 is 115,000. You have to meet 125,000 for your power factor. So that would not meet power. In other words, that would not be going fast enough. Most 115 grain 9mm is going to be traveling faster than 1,000 feet per second. But I just use that as an example of what would not work. Now, typically, if it's going 1,200 and something feet per second, which it probably would be out of my Glock 34, multiply that by 115 grains, and I'm fine. I'm meeting power factor. So that's how they calculate that. So if you have a 230 grain ball, 45 ACP, and it's traveling, you know, 800 feet per second, which is probably what a standard factory loading is going to travel, you're fine. You're making power factor. Power factor in CDP is a little bit higher anyway, in the custom defensive pistol division. But anyway, that's what they do. It's you know, for you newbies, it's kind of confusing, but once you get into it and you start studying it, it's really not all that bad to figure out. But that nice long barrel. Now, from a defense standpoint, if you're going to use a Glock 34 for self-defense, the other great thing about that is you put hollow points in that, and you're most likely going to get real good velocity and real good expansion. I mean, woo, my Corban DPX that I love. I just love the copper bullet, the deep cavity, the lower recoil for most hot loads. I just love that round. I mean, it's made for penetration and it's made for expansion. That's what you want. Now, if I'm shooting that out of my Glock 34, it's going to be effective because the Glock 34 has the barrel length to give me the expansion that I need and the velocity that I need. So the overall combination of barrel length, sight radius, velocity, let's see, the trigger, the magazine release button, and all that that comes on the Glock 34. And, you know, it comes out of the box with adjustable sights. I take those off. I put fixed sights on there. I use the Warren Savigny carry sights. I love them. I think they're great for competition. As you know, I use the black-on-black. I'm kind of an old-fashioned shooter. I learned shooting pistols black-on-black sights, and that's just kind of what I like. You know, some people say, oh, Bob, put a fiber optic on the front. It's faster. There's just something, I don't know, something weird. Maybe I need to get used to it. Something weird when I look at a red or a green front sight. I just like to have that front sight post black. And, you know, the Warren Savignys gives you a couple of good advantages. First of all, the rear notch is very wide. A lot of real estate, a lot of light there in between the two posts in the back. The rear notch is what I'm trying to say. And so when I line that up, I can get good precise shots. I can get good up close shots. It's easy to find my front sight. The way these things are designed, even if I have to do some one-handed manipulations, the sights are good for that too. So that, I love that part of it. By the way, something I just realized I forgot. I have to correct myself here on something. When you figure the power factor of your loads, if they're going to meet IDPA power factor, you have to divide that total number by 1,000. So for example, let me do that again. Let's say I'm shooting 115 grain 9mm bullets, and they're going 1,100 feet per second. Okay, that's 126,500. If I divide that by 1,000, I get 126.5. So I'm making power factor with those, because the power factor has to be 125 in stock service pistol division. I can't remember what the power factor is. I think the power factor is 165 in CDP. I might have to be corrected on that. But anyway, what you do there is you take your 230 grain 45 ACP, and if those are traveling, let's say, 800 feet per second, that gives you 184,000, and then you divide that by 1,000, and it gives you a power factor of 184. You're well in the range. You're definitely meeting power factor with a 45. So that's how you do that. So I stand corrected. I forgot the divide by 1,000. So I beg your forgiveness on that. I just load up and shoot. I don't get real scientific and technical into this stuff. Okay, what else do I like about the Glock 34 or the Smith & Wesson M&P Pro? Or even, I'll tell you what, you know, the XD 5-inch guns. I'm not a big fan of grip safeties on XDs, but they're fine pistols, and I'm not going to knock XDs. I just prefer the Glocks. They work for me. But if the XD Tacticals or the M&P Pros work for you, the beautiful thing about these long guns like that, these longer 5-inch guns, is that they have relatively low recoil, especially in 9mm. If you put a Glock 34 or a M&P Pro next to a 1911, a full-size 5-inch 1911, you'll notice they're not that much different in size. Now, a big difference in weight, and of course the grip girth, because the Glock 34 and the M&P and the XD, because those are double-stack guns, the grip girth is a lot wider than on a 1911, but size-wise, about the same. The Glock 34 barely fits into the IDPA box. IDPA has a little box that your gun has to fit in there, and if it won't fit in there, it's not legal. So if you're using magazines too long, or if your gun's just too big or slides too long, it won't fit in their box. Glock 34 just barely makes it. So that's also a good thing, is you've got a decent-sized gun, low recoil. Now, let me talk about the Glock 34 from a home defense standpoint. I think it's a fantastic home defense gun. I keep mine at home with a light attached to it. I use a Glock rail light. I just, you know, I got a good deal on it, and I'm sure there's better lights out there. But I've practiced with that Glock rail light, and it works great. Now, I got to tell you, you put a light on the rail of a Glock 34 and stick one of those 33-round happy sticks in there. Gabe Suarez calls them happy sticks. 33 rounds and 9mm. It's great. That's a mean home defense gun right there, guys. I got to tell you, that's pretty that's cool. It's fun to shoot. Looks cool, too. I mean, the cool factor, the way that looks, I think I'll try to take a picture of my Glock 34 with a 33-round mag in it and a rail-mounted light. It's kind of a cool-looking gun. 17 rounds in the mag and one in the pipe, 18 rounds on board with a light, with a standard mag, or 34 rounds with the 33-round mag. Man, I'm telling you what, I'm going to be sending some lead at you. So from a home defense gun, it's kind of cool. And I don't keep mine in the safe with a 33-round mag because it won't fit in the safe with a 33-round mag. I keep it in there with the regular 17-round mag. And by the way, some of you who are new, somebody emailed me once and asked me if the magazine and frame size on a Glock 34 is the same as a Glock 17. The answer is yes. All Glock did was take the Glock 17 frame and the Glock 17 parts and everything. All they did was stick a longer slide and a longer barrel on it. And that, again, that's why they had to cut out part of the slide to make the weight and everything balance right so that the gun cycles and functions properly. So, if you're going to use a G34 for home defense, use it as a truck gun, whatever, excellent choice. Too big for me to carry, though. Just a little too big. Even in a Comptech MTAC holster, that's just still hard for me to conceal. It's just real bulky, unnecessary. For typical handgun distances, I trust my Glock 19 just fine. I've made 25-yard shots with my G19, and as long as I'm doing everything right, it gets out there just fine. So that's why I carry that. Now, I will tell you something that I've done with my Glock 34. I kind of cheat a little bit. And I took out the standard guide rod, the standard, you know, chintzy plastic guide rod that Glock puts in there, recoil spring and guide rod. I put a stainless steel guide rod in, and I put a non-captured spring in there with the standard spring weight. I like to use standard spring weights. I don't like to shrink down my recoil spring weights. It doesn't feel right to me. So I just used the standard spring weight and put it in there. I know that's not technically legal. When I shot Texas match, the state match, I took that out, and I put the regular factory spring weight back in there, factory recoil spring back in there in case it was checked and stuff like that. But I kind of feel that it tames the recoil a little bit. Now, the recoil is pretty low on the Glock 34. On the Glock 35, it gets a little stiff. If you're shooting the .40 caliber version of that gun, it can get a little stiff. So a lot of people like to put in the heavier guide rod. But IDPA's got a dumb rule that for some reason they say, well, because the Glocks have come with the plastic guide rod, you got to stick with the factory parts, and you can't change that. I think that's stupid, but I don't make the rules for IDPA. I enjoy their game. I enjoy the gun handling skills from the matches, so I don't squawk too much about that. When I'm not in a sanctioned match, I keep that stainless steel guide rod in there with the standard spring weight. So you might want to think about that. Doesn't affect reliability at all. And so with that, I'm going to wrap up my brief little review here of the Glock 34. Excellent pistol for gun gaming and just home defense, stuff like that. The M&P Pros, same thing. XD. I'll tell you one really cool gun. I got to hand it to the M&P 45s, and I'm lusting after an M&P 5-inch 45. I tell you what, that would be sweet. I'm not even sure yet if they're making that 45 in the 5-inch. I think they are. If somebody knows whether they are, let me know. No, don't let me know. It might tempt me to go out and buy one. I've had a chance to actually rent and shoot the M&P Compact 45, and I got to tell you, for a Compact 45, you know, I was expecting that thing to really beat me up, and it didn't beat me up as bad as I thought. So I gotta hand it to the Smith & Wesson folks for those M&P 45s. So, but any of those long guns like that, any of the longer slide, the M&P Pros, XD9 Tacticals, XDMs, Glock 34s, great gaming guns, folks. Good gaming guns. Dave Savigny's won several national championships in IDPA and USPSA and lots of other different shooting sports with a Glock 34. He doesn't modify his very much. I think all he does is put some grip tape on it, and he might have one or two springs changed out, and then of course the sights, and that's it. So, you know, hey, if he can do that, it means that the gun is capable. The gun is extremely capable. It's, you know, one thing I like about the Glock 34, M&P Pro, XD9 Tacticals, you know, you go out and you shoot gun games with those and you don't do well, it's not the gun. They're made for that. Okay. Quick break. I'm at my next stop, and I'll be back on shortly.
New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg is bloviating about gun shows, blaming these congenial get-togethers as a source of violence in his city. Bloomberg evidently hasn't listened to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, which reports that less than 1% of guns used in crimes were bought at a gun show. Bloomberg might want to listen to the Anti-Gun Center to Prevent Handgun Violence, which surveyed large police departments and learned that less than 5% of cop shops felt that gun shows were a problem. Better yet, Bloomberg should put a chain on his local thugs and leave out-of-state gun shows alone. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
All right, folks, I'm done with my next call, and actually, I don't have to drive here for a bit. So I'm going to go ahead and finish up this podcast. I'm going to dictate this next segment here while I'm sitting in my car. That way you won't hear a bunch of background noise and maybe the GPS yakking at me once in a while. So a little bit of news. I don't typically cover news, but actually this isn't really firearms-related legal stuff or anything. But some things I've been reading about guns lately and people's perception that I think you as a listener may be interested to know. For those of you that have been concealed carrying a long time, or if you're just getting into it, I'm going to share something with you about what a lot of people still think of us. And what I'm about to tell you right now, this is why we also not only have to win in the court of the lands. In other words, we have to win our court cases so that we can continue to protect our Second Amendment rights. But we also have to win in the court of public opinion. I'll say that again. Not only do we have to win in court to preserve our rights, but we as gun owners have to preserve our image in the court of public opinion. Listen to this. This comes from the USA Today. There were people that were writing in. You know, there's a little section in the USA Today where they publish people's little letters that they write in. Listen to this. This comes from a guy named Paul Hansey in Berea, Ohio. And he wrote this to the USA Today. He writes, "Let's take a new approach to gun control in America. Let's let average citizens take their guns anywhere. But those carrying should have to wear their guns in a place where everyone can see them. That gun doesn't make the carrier a trained police officer. He says, gun carriers represent danger. A seat next to a person with a gun is a more perilous seat than others. That carrier can get me killed. He can be both a shooter and a prime target. Let those of us who don't like guns see those who are carrying guns, so we can cross the street as quickly as possible to get away from them. We should challenge gun carriers to have the courage to tell us who they are and that they are armed. We have the right to know. We have the right to give danger a wide berth. I'm trying to keep myself here from getting real angry. But Paul Hansen, I got to tell you, you are one serious pinhead. I mean, what an idiot. Now, first of all, we have to realize something. This is the way some people look at those of us who carry guns. They look at us this way. They think that we are danger. You know, the statement he makes that gun carriers present danger and a seat next to a person with a gun is more perilous, it's a more perilous seat than others. Baloney! What a big line of crap! I wonder if Paul Hansen has ever checked the statistics on the number of concealed carry gun carriers that commit crimes. And compare that, Mr. Hansen, to the number of criminals that shouldn't have a gun in their hands. How many of those commit crimes? I mean, what adult? You know, I think I'm going to email this guy. Well, I can't. I don't have his email address. I'd love to email him gunfacts.info website and have him look at it. But, man, what an idiot. You know, and also in here where he says, let's see. Oh, that gun doesn't make the carrier a trained police officer. Now, I'm going to say something very delicately here because I love cops and I don't want to make it seem like I'm picking on cops, but I know lots of private citizens that carry guns that are more well-trained than police officers. So he's also wrong about that. He's right. The gun itself doesn't make the person a trained police officer. But let's say that there's a, you know, that there are, that most police officers are well trained. Let's just say that, and let's talk about Mr. Hansen's argument here. Okay, are there enough trained police officers to go around and to protect you, Mr. Hansen? Are they with you and your family, and your spouse if you have one? Are they with you 24/7, with all of their training and their weapons to protect you? No, they're not. What an idiot. And his last paragraph where he says, we should challenge gun carriers to have the courage to tell us who they are and that they are armed. We have the right to know. We have the right to know. No, you don't, Mr. Hansen. You don't have the right to know who's carrying and who's not. And this is kind of a sensitive subject because I entered an internet forum once, and the argument, I think the argument had to do with one of my podcasts once, where I made a comment saying that if I go into somebody else's home and I'm concealed carrying, that I don't have to notify that person when I'm concealed carrying that I'm entering their home with a firearm. Here's my position on that. If they ask me if I have a firearm, I'll be honest and I'll tell them I do. If they don't like it and they want me to leave their house because I have a firearm on me, then I will leave the house and I'll go unload the firearm and leave it in my car. If they have a problem with that, I still don't think that I have to, before I walk across the threshold of their front door, say, oh, hey, by the way, you know what? I'm carrying. That's up to debate. You know, some people say, well, people have a right to know in their own homes what's going on in their own homes and who's entering. Most people that know me know that I carry anyway. And I'm not quite sure how I feel about that, but about Mr. Hansen's argument here, that we all have the right to know who's carrying. No, you don't, Mr. Hansen. You don't have the right to know that. And see, this could be an argument here against open carry. Because you got a lot of Paul Hanseys out there that think that we're dangerous people. And they think that we should not be sitting next to these gun carriers because they're dangerous. Well, you know, if you're open carry, you're obvious to the idiots out there like Paul Hansey. And they will make you out to be some kind of a beast. Because this guy here with this article, he's trying to make gun carriers look like they're the low life of society. And so, even though I'm warming up to the idea of open carry, and I'm coming around to the fact that it is our right to open carry, and it's a protected right, and people should be allowed to do that, I would like to see every state go to a system where you can open carry or concealed, either or. Take your pick, do either one, it's allowed here in this state. That would be utopia, right? That would be awesome. But to all of you out there who love open carry, this right here, because of the Paul Hanseys out there that aren't going to change their mind. I mean, if you think that by you carrying a gun and abiding by the law going to change the minds of guys like Paul Hansey, I respectfully disagree with you. It's not. So there's a lot of guys like him out there which sometimes make me think it's probably better if we just keep these guns concealed so that people can't see them. So that when I sit down on a train or a bus next to Paul Hansey, he doesn't know my Glock 19 is on my hip. Because if he knows my Glock 19 is on my hip, he's liable to start shouting, "Man with a gun, man with a gun, man with a gun." Because he is adult. And he doesn't know any better. All right. I think I did that without getting too mad. And so I'm going to go ahead and finish with this. Here's another little article that I want to share with you. Now, this is kind of the opposite view of Paul Hansey in Ohio. This is Ken Pulliam in Houston wrote this to the USA Today. This is some good stuff here. He says, if some magic trick could make every firearm disappear, the world would be a better place. But the sad reality is that as long as there are criminals, law-abiding citizens need to defend themselves. It takes several minutes, sometimes more, for police to respond to a 911 call. A gunfight lasts only seconds. If a gun-wielding criminal suddenly attacked, with which would you trust your life? Police or your own gun? The overworked police or your own gun in your hand, which one would you trust more? Even as the Supreme Court has ruled on this emotion-filled topic several times, I always wonder which part of the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed is unclear. Now, I just don't like the first statement he made. If some magic trick could make every firearm disappear, the world would be a safer place. Nah, not. I disagree with you on that, Ken Pulliam. But the rest of what you said was very, very good, and that's why I wanted to point it out. Because he's right. The sad reality is that criminals don't obey laws. Criminals are always going to have guns, and that law-abiding citizens also need to have firearms so that they can defend themselves. Because as we all know, and as I've talked about numerous times on this podcast and many other podcasters that do what I do, we always point out the situations where it just takes the cops too long to get there. Calling 911 before the attack is 99.9% of the time not going to help you. So, way to go, Ken Pulliam from Houston. Good job. Way to send that in there. And I'm just still amazed at the attitude of Paul Hansey from Ohio, aren't you? What do you think of that? Go to the Gun Rights Radio Network forum. Set up a thread about this show, about episode 75. Throw some comments on there about some of the stuff that you think that Paul Hansey said here. And I'll tell you what I'm going to do. His little article here is small enough. I'm going to retype it, and I'm going to put it all in quotation marks so that you understand that it's not me talking, that it's I'm quoting this guy. I'm going to put it in quotes. I'm going to start a thread on the Gun Rights Radio Network forum and go ahead and chime in on that. And that's all, folks. Thanks for tuning in to episode number 75. It was my goal to give you some more information on Mosin-Nagant, specifically Finnish Mosin-Nagant. So thank you very much, Miko from Finland, for sending that in. And I wanted to talk about my Glock 34. Some of you have been requesting that I do that. I do have a show coming up on revolvers. Stay tuned, revolver enthusiasts. I'm going to do what I said. I'm going to go rent some revolvers, probably a half a dozen of them, and I'm going to shoot them, and then I'm going to do a review, let you know what I think of them, just kind of give you my honest everyday guy's opinion on revolvers and how they shoot and function and how they are for self-defense and so forth. And I am going to get to, in the next episode, the information that I want to share with you on sighted shooting, sighted versus point shooting, and a combination of both. That's going to be coming up in episode 76. So let me go ahead and say, this is Bob Main. Thanks for tuning in to the Handgun World Show. And the reason I carry a gun, Mr. Paul Hansey in Ohio, the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for tuning in. Catch you next time, folks. Bye-bye.
Send lawyers, guns, and money. This shit has hit the fan. Oh, send lawyers, guns, and money.